Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to Attacking Third, the CBS Sports Soccer Podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, NWSL analyst and broadcaster. We've got a preview today for everyone. Match two of the friendly for U.S. Women's National Team against Paraguay. And we have a great interview for you all today with Yael Averbush-West, the GM of Gotham FC. First, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third and let you know you can watch full NWSL extended highlights and World Cup qualifier highlights. Anything broadcasted on Paramount Plus, you could catch over on our YouTube page at youtube.com/attackingthird. Subscribe to our YouTube page so you don't miss a single thing. Lisa, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm trying out a new flavor of coffee this morning. We're recording in the morning, and it's really quite nice. It was quite the surprise for my taste buds, and I'm really pleasantly surprised with it.
You know, I just want to like say it's so underrated, the morning experience of like the morning beverage. I don't think people, I know coffee drinkers are like, yes, I got to have my coffee in the morning. But I just say like in general, the morning beverage period is a very important way to start your day. So whether it's coffee, whether you're just like a water person, if you just want to start your day making sure that you are hydrated, which quite frankly, everybody should.
It's probably the way to go, everybody but I should. Don't do that.
Yeah, everybody should just like slam some water before they actually do make that choice for what's next in the morning. But yeah, I'm a water, I try to be a water person in the morning for sure. But we have a little bit of a preview portion that we got to get into first in this episode. So our preview segment is going to be for the second match that the United States women's national team is going to be facing off against Paraguay. And we kind of content planned this a little bit, Lisa, just to sort of give our listeners a bit of look into the content planning, right, that we're doing. We're like, geez, it's like, you know, we did this recap. We had a great live, you know, post-game live reactions to the first game. We had a lot of participation in that one. It was great to sort of see people hop on and engage with us a bit while we were doing the recap. And we thought to ourselves, how are we going to, you know, preview this for this next game, considering we just the game that we just recapped is was a 9-0 blowout. What's going to be within there for us to look at? So we thought a fun thing for us to do together with our listeners is throw out some U.S. Women's National Team lineups. And these aren't necessarily going to be predictions, but a little bit about kind of like a wish list, basically, like what we would like to see in a second game against a team that you literally just, you know, kind of blew out of the water, you know, just a couple nights ago, basically. So I'm going to go first since I'm leading, since I'm leading the charge here. And then Lisa, you can hit me with what you got. And I feel like I won't be surprised if there are some similarities.
I agree. I will see, I'm sure we'll see some similarities, but I love this wish list starting lineup because really there's no wrong answers.
Yeah, we're just talking, we're just having a good time. So the game is going to be taking place on Tuesday, September the 21st in Cincinnati, the hometown of Rose Lavelle. So I'm already giving a little bit of foreshadowing there probably in terms of what I want to see in my midfield. But you know, in terms of what I would like to see the coaching staff put out there, I think we're both going to be in agreement. I already have Jane Campbell in that when we took a look at this initial roster announcement, we saw two goalkeepers get called in to this. And we're like, hey, two games, each of them should get 90 minutes. Let's go. So Jane Campbell is getting the start for me. In terms of the back line, I would like to see a little bit of rotation. Crystal Dunn deserves a break, so she is not in my back line. So I do have Casey Krueger, Tierna Davidson. I do have Becky Sauerbrunn again because I am selfish and I would like to see her possibly get a goal. We saw her knocking a little bit in the first game, so I want Becky Sauerbrunn to get a start again selfishly. And I have Emily Sonnet closing out the back line there just because Kelly O'Hara ended up going, playing the extended minutes that she did in the first game. Now for the midfield, I kind of had some mixed feelings here. I was like, well, you know, yes, Crystal Dunn deserves a rest, but I also selfishly want to see her in the midfield. So I don't have her starting in the midfield right now, but I do in my mind, in Sandra's mind, she's absolutely a like midfield candidate, like prospect in this particular.
So she's coming off the bench for you, but she'll
coming off the bench
in midfield.
Yeah, okay. Like it's a short turnaround. It's quick.
So we're doing subs too. I love this.
let's get into it. So I have Andy Sullivan getting a second consecutive start. I just feel like she had a great game and she got called into these camps for a reason. So give her the start again. But alongside of that, the hometown kid giving Rose Lavelle the start in this one. And I'd like to see Katarina Macario in this midfield as well for the team moving forward. And in terms of the top line, I'm going with a little bit more experience. Tobin Heath came off of the bench in the first game. I'd like to see her get a start in this one alongside the other veteran, Carly Lloyd. Quite frankly, it's her farewell tour, so going to see her get the start. And I'd like to see Sophia Smith get the start up top with them as well and just sort of see what the three of them can do early on in the game.
Sandra, I'm surprised you didn't have all three Red Stars starting. You had Casey Krueger, Tierna Davidson, but no Mal Pugh? What? Three assists isn't good enough for you in the last
Listen,
game?
It's too good. It's too good. And I'm like, you know what? You deserve a break.
No, I respect that. I respect that. Okay. So you'll have in the midfield, you'll have Andy Sullivan as more of your defensive six.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when Crystal Dunn rotates in, who's coming out?
Probably Lavelle.
Even though it's her hometown?
Yeah. Give her the send off. Give her a little wave.
I just like to ask the hard questions here.
I mean, the game's not hard. Today's the game, so it's not a hard question to me. It's like, okay, let her get the wave. Let her get the applause, you know? Let her get the walk-off.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good call. But as a player, it hurts a little bit to be like, oh, I don't get to play the full 90. I don't get to finish this out when we have only four midfielders available.
Listen, look, they know what these games are. They know what they're about. They know that they are in the middle of a club season with a playoff push. Laura Harvey knows the U.S. Women's National Team. I'm sure those conversations have been had long before these games even got kicked off. So they're going to probably be paying attention to minutes for sure.
Yes, of course, because they're in a big playoff push right now.
But yeah,
okay. I like your lineup.
I want to hear yours. I'm curious to see if we've got similar. Besides Jane Campbell, I'm curious to see if we got other similar things.
How do you know I want to start Jane Campbell?
Okay, well, give me the.
I do. No, I definitely want to start Jane Campbell. All right. She deserves it. I've been saying this since we first found out about this roster. You only have two keepers, and two matches against the same country in Paraguay. They both deserve 90 minutes in goal, because that never happens with goalkeepers. And instead of just throwing Campbell in there when you need her, give her the start and show her that she has the confidence to play in goal. So, yes, I have Jane Campbell in goal. I am starting Casey Krueger as well, outside on the left back position. And I like to have Abby Dahlkemper and Becky Sauerbrunn in my middle. And then Sonnet on the outside right. I think Emily Sonnet is a player that can do better than we've seen. Because when we do see her on the pitch, she usually doesn't give us that much. And I think it's often the situation she's thrown into. But you could say that for any player, and they make the most of it and they play better than that. But I think a player like Emily Saunas, she's clearly showing something in these training camps because she keeps being called back time and time again into these national team rosters. But I, Lisa Roman, haven't seen what Black Wandanowski sees from her yet, and I want to see it. So throwing her alongside Becky Sauerbrunn in the center back position with the starting lineup, I think we could get something really good out of Sonnet. So that's my back line. Then in the midfield, yes, we have to start Rose Lavelle. I'm also starting Andy Sullivan because she had a great game. So she'll be the defensive. Rose Lavelle, hometown girly, she gets the start. And Crystal Dunn, she's getting the start in the midfield for me. I want to see that. She plays the midfield for Portland Thorns. She's an attacking-minded player.
Yeah.
She is. And for some reason, at the national level, they've pigeonholed her into the back line. Because she's so good,
yeah.
I understand, but she can provide so many great looks up top. And I think she's less of a liability because you know she's going to defend like heck in the midfield.
Yeah.
So that's my midfield three, Sullivan, Lavelle, and Dunn. Then up top, Carly Lloyd, of course, alongside Sophia Smith and Mal Pugh.
Okay.
I want to see what the young, energetic duo of Smith and Pugh can look like alongside someone like Carly Lloyd, who last time the U.S. played against Paraguay had some 64 touches on 5 goals. I think that's pretty magical.
I'm into it. I like both of these lineups, quite frankly. I like that in our scenarios, no matter, like, even though they're different little scenarios, the concept is still there. Like, we absolutely want to see Crystal Dunn in the midfield,
yes,
in some capacity for the United States women's national team. We cover the league on this podcast. We have seen week in, week out what Crystal Dunn provides for the Portland Thorns side. We have seen what Crystal Dunn has provided for teams in the past as she's played higher, whether it was with North Carolina Courage or when she was with Washington Spirit. She is a brilliant attacking minded player. And so if you have enough depth, if you do have enough capable depth at defense, I don't see where the struggle is in terms of the conflict, let's say, in terms of being able to start maybe pushing her a little bit higher, you know, as 2022 is on the horizon and this team really does start to take a look at 2023 World Cup. The fact that there are so many missing midfielders, yes, right now in these two, yes, friendlies is the time to do that, quite frankly.
Right. Let her have some fun. You're going to get the win anyway, Vladko.
Yeah, I know we both would love to see it. And then so I guess that raises those questions still about the back line where it's like, mm-hmm, oh, well, what happens at outside? You know, this back line has become so reliant on somebody like a Crystal Dunn, where the narrative was maybe almost similar during the Olympics, where in the midfield, where it was like, oh my gosh, like this midfield has become so reliant on a Julie Ertz. Like, what does that mean for the midfield, right? So I think the similar storyline is echoed, I think, maybe with the back line and the outside back position specifically. But I wouldn't hate some rotation around the back line either. Maybe not even just the center back position because, mm-hmm, you know, Tierna Davidson has also played outside back as well. She has gotten very, very limited minutes at that position, but we've seen it happen in game time scenarios, not so much in a start, but we've seen it in game time, mm-hmm, scenarios where she's been shifted over. Same with club. I've seen it with the Chicago Red Stars as well. And I wouldn't hate if that happened in this game either. Seeing somebody like Tierna Davidson at outside back and maybe flipping the script a little bit and pushing Emily Saunas back into center back, which quite, yeah, frankly is a stronger position for her in terms of defensive positions where she lines up. I know there are some coaches out there who think that she, an argument can be made for her as a bit of a defensive six as well. Mm-hmm. But her bread and butter has typically been at a center back position. So I wouldn't hate maybe flipping that a little bit and seeing that as well.
So you would put Tierna Davidson left back or right back? Alongside Kruger being the other back, outside back.
I think Kruger is the more capable and fluid outside back. So I would be fine seeing her at either for Kruger being so if they want to see Tierna Davidson get more, see if she's capable of getting more involved in an attack, I wouldn't mind if this was the game where they wanted to see her get on the left hand side.
Okay, so Davidson on the left.
Yeah, why not?
And let's see what
she does alongside maybe somebody like a Tobin Heath or something. I wouldn't, that could be fun.
I would like to see that. And I think Davidson on the outside would be good, especially in this game where assuming they're probably not going to have that much defensive pressure. There'll be some.
I was gonna say, this is the game to do.
Heck yeah. And then when you look at the front line and the rotation between the forwards, now our front lines were different. You had Tobin Heath, Carly Lloyd, and Sophia Smith. Mm-hmm. I had Sophia Smith, Carly Lloyd, and Mel Pugh. My first rotation off the bench, probably at 45, probably at half, I'd take Carly Lloyd out.
That's fair.
Throw in a Lynn Williams, and I'd have Smith, Williams, and Mal Pugh for a few minutes. Give them probably until the 60-minute mark.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think in
the chaos that causes.
I think in like a non Carly Lloyd tour, that absolutely happens. I think they'll have to, you know, pay her to come off of the yes. Like, well, we'll give you a bonus if you sub off at half. You know, I just think like
she's going to be like, no, I'll pay you to stay on.
Yeah. It's just like the competitor in her is going to be like, okay, so I'm starting, so I'm going 90. Right. I just think that's like, might be how it plays out. But I'm with you though, in that if there is an opportunity and if there is a scenario in which Sophia Smith, Mal Pugh, and Lynn Williams get on the pitch together at the same time, it would be like an absolute delight. So I would love to see it as well.
I'd be so giddy.
I would too. But you know, these were just like a wish list five. We wanted to come on here and say this is what we would like to see. Let us know, folks. Let us know, listeners, what you would like to see. And we'll see if we'll compare. We'll come back in the recap and see if we got any of this, if we were able to actually predict anything. But just as a reminder, this United States Women's National Team match will be played on Tuesday, September 21st at 7:30 Eastern Central Standard Time. Eastern Standard Time in Cincinnati, Ohio. Gosh, that's a mouthful. Lisa and I are going to go live again after that match. We're going to be on YouTube right after the match, post whistle, with your first reactions once again. So please join us, everybody. We have people coming and hanging out and giving us some love and giving us some questions. I had some good dialogue going on in the chat there. So please join us at youtube.com/attackingthird. Please stick around right after this quick break. We have an incredible interview with Yael Averbush West with the Gotham FC GM. So thank you all so much for listening.
Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today we have a special edition interview episode, and we have a special guest joining us today. We are here today with former U.S. Women's National Team player and current New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC General Manager, Yael Averbusch-West. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was a very, that was a lot of words for my intro, so you did well with that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I always want to make our guests feel special and welcome to the show, and B, I also want to get through the intro. So those are, as long as I hit those 2 points, I feel accomplished, and I feel like we set the table for the episode. But we're very excited to have you here for our listeners who are unfamiliar with your legacy, Yael. I will just let them know very quickly that you're someone who has played professionally for 11 years. You started your domestic club soccer career back in the day, 2009, with then Sky Blue FC. It was a kind of a hometown tie for you. You went on to become executive director of the NWSL Players Association, and now you're on the soccer operation side of things. That is many hats to be wearing, along with probably the biggest hat, which is mom as well, right?
A lot of hats, yes. But actually, it's funny because I was, I considered myself just an NWSL fan up until like now. I guess it was maybe a month and a half ago, like a season ticket holder for Gotham FC. I was like, this is nice. I'm just on the outside, and now I'm back on the inside. So I couldn't stay away for that long.
Yeah, you mentioned being a fan before you stepped into this interim GM position, which about a month ago had happened. There was a media swarm around all of the attention with the old GM being terminated in Elise LeHue, and now you stepping in and going from sitting on one side of the stadium to the other, besides your seat in Red Bull Arena. What's been the biggest adjustment since stepping into this GM role?
You know, I think it's interesting because no matter how much you understand, like I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of, you know, the history of this club because as Sandra mentioned, you know, I was here literally at the start, like the first ever pro club meeting where we talked about the goals for the club and the vision and everything. And then over the years in NWSL, you know what's going on at the other clubs, working with the Players Association. I had spoken to the players here numerous times, but you never really know until you're there. So I think for me, it's been a learning curve to actually understand, to have conversations and understand what's going on, good and needs improvement, and why is it like this, and what things can we do to push it forward. So it's been like every day I'm having conversations and learning what we can do to mostly, you know, support the players to be their best. I think all of this in NWSL, it's about the players and the fans. So what can we do to make the players as happy as possible, as good as possible when they go out to perform on game day, and to make the brand as exciting and entertaining as possible for the fans?
So let's narrow down things a little bit. Let's maybe talk about like the week in the life of a GM, or even a day if a week is too much, because there's a lot of maybe questions from the casual listener or casual fans where it's like, general manager of a women's pro soccer team, what does that mean? What does it look like? There are people's assumptions or interpretations of what that role could be. Some people feel like it's more of a team building side, someone who's assembling a team, putting it together to put together a winning club. Others have taken on deeper roles, which is like helping establishing cultures and organizational cultures for their clubs. And a lot of that has also, like you said, included being able to be a focal point or someone, a connector with the players, and someone to also sort of be that communications person, someone to sort of keep the transparency with fans. Is that something for you that you want to keep as all encompassing, or is your focus maybe in or more in one area?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because when I think about it, I even feel overwhelmed listening to you. But that's the reality. I think this role looks totally different at every club, I'm sure, because even when I thought about taking the role and I thought about GM, I was like, what does that mean? I had the same thought process. Like, what does this entail? Like, let me literally see a list. And the list of the potential job description is like, it's enormous. It's everything. So I think, you know, the club has done a really good job in bringing me on, I think, of breaking pieces off to make it more manageable and to make it fit kind of my area of strength. So one really good thing that the club has done is kind of separated the business side from the soccer operations. So I am purely in charge of the soccer operations, which is it feels better to me than trying to look at the whole picture, which the reality was, you know, Elise LeHue was doing all of it, which is, I can't even imagine the scope of that job. And then I also have an assistant working with me, Stephanie Lee, who's been at other NWSL clubs. And so she has been there and done that. She's been in league meetings. She's, you know, worked with the contracts, the salary cap, all those things that are a huge learning curve on my end. You know, that's probably, I would say, the biggest part of the league that I'm so unfamiliar with is that part, because I've been almost in surrounding all the other sides of it. But all of that, like, it was stuff I never would see. I wouldn't see anyone's contract besides my own. So because of that, I've been able to break off kind of a really nice segment of focusing on really kind of setting the stage for the club culture. And this club, I think, has already an amazing club culture. So it's not creating the culture, but it's figuring out how to protect it and how to continue to advance it. And I mean, it's no secret to anyone that the club hasn't had the success on the field of some other clubs in the league. And this year is the first time, you know, we see some numbers in the win column. And that's a really important part of things, you know, for the players' morale, for the club moving forward. So it's twofold of like making that culture even more, giving even more of a platform to the players who really carry the culture. But then also, like, how can we create something where there's long lasting success on the field and stability in terms of that, like really building on the success on the field. So that's the puzzle that I'm tasked with, and how to do it, I can't yet speak to exactly, but that's what I'm figuring out as I go.
You're a few weeks into it though. So you have the blueprint, you saw the job description, and now you've kind of circled the ones that Gotham and the club specifically want you to focus on, but it's still, there's so much that goes into it. And you mentioned you're focusing on the soccer op side of it. So I have to ask, game week, let's just say, what are your daily duties leading up to the game day, where does your job not even really focus around a game day for Gotham FC?
Quite honestly, I'm pretty separated from that in the sense that, like, I live locally, so it's really nice. I drive maybe like not even 25 minutes to the training facility. And when I say I'm going to training, I actually have never really stood out and watched training. Like, that's what I was thinking of. Oh, you know, I'm going to watch training. I'll, you know, really be down on the field in the games. But it's not, I think, you know, my work ideally should be done far before anything that actually happens on the field. So for me, it's about setting up everything prior to that. Like, once game day comes, that's kind of, I'm hoping, the time to sit back and relax and like watch the show unfold, kind of. So that's the way I've approached
it. Your off day. That's like almost your off day.
Yeah. To sit almost, maybe relative term, but the reality is there's like a lot of other people kind of on the ground doing the bulk of that work. And I'm so grateful for them because they're carrying out the show. You know, the staff and the players come game day, that's their time. They spend, you know, they prepare at the stadium, they prepare the locker room, the players show up, they do their thing. And I'm kind of like, I show up like any other fan. I have a little more invested now and I'm a little more stressed, I will say. But really, when you hear up, I think operation, like the soccer operations, is maybe a little misleading, because the staff here does an amazing job of carrying out really the nitty gritty of the operations. And I kind of am responsible for just overseeing those processes and making sure it's running smoothly.
You know, talking a little bit about some of your previous accolades and your experiences leading up to this role that you're in, what is it about perhaps your history as a former player specifically that has maybe helped you in these early weeks of being a GM with Gotham?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first task here for me was bringing in a couple new coaches. And so I think, as a player, my understanding of the magnitude of that decision and the process that needed to take place, I think it is really deep, because for me, and I've always thought this as a player, like the coaching staff of a team, and I wouldn't even say just the head coach, because that's something I've actually really, my eyes have been open to since I got here, is the coaching staff as a team. Like, it's a group effort. It's not just the one head coach. I think often we think about like who's the head coach of the team, and that's what we think about, but that's that's not how it works. That's like just looking at the star player on a team. That's not what causes the team to be successful or not. So for me, looking at piecing together the right staff, like that is make or break for the player experience. And as we know from seeing in the media, from everything that goes on in the league, the player experience, from that, everything else emanates out. If the players are happy and feel like they're being treated professionally, they're getting better, they can compete to be their best on the field, everything else in the organization builds off of that. And if that's not right, you know, like everybody knows, it's no secret. So for me, I think that is probably like potentially the single most important work I will have to do, especially in the short term. And I really viewed it as like doing it for the players. It is for the organization. It's for the league. It's bigger than that, but really it's for the players. This affects their everyday life and like all the way down to their mental health. So, I honestly forgot where the question even started, but that's where I went with
you. You took it where you,
I don't know.
You're fine. You took it completely where it needed to go. I think that that's a little bit underrated, that maybe the former player experience, specifically as a women's soccer player in a women's pro league, is huge and important. And
that's where it started, with the player experience.
Yeah, that shouldn't shouldn't be overlooked. But you touched on it a little bit, so let's get into the nitty gritty. I'm sure our listeners would love a little bit of insider info if you're willing to give it. But that was one of the very first big things that you were tasked with in this position, was appointing some new head coaches. Freya Coombe departed the club, took a new position with the forthcoming Angel City FC club that they'll be joining the league in 2022. And then all of a sudden, you really had to tighten up that GM hat, and there was a coaching search that went underway. Didn't really feel like you guys had a lot of time to maybe sort of get that going, but you eventually announced the appointment of Scott Parkinson as head coach, and then for the assistant coach side of things, Bev Gobel-Yanez as the first assistant. So why this duo? What was the search like? What was the vetting process like? What would you like our listeners to know about this process?
Yeah. So I think the first most important thing is, you know, like the way things go down in the media is sometimes like a little misleading in terms of timelines, especially, I would say. So while like it looked like it all happened really quickly, and relatively it was a quick turnaround, but I mean, the reality is I had about a month from when we had internal conversations with Freya, which, by the way, were left on really good terms. Like, we wish her the best. Freya's a lovely person. I didn't get to know her so much as a coach, but like, I think like people try to bring up some thing, drama or things that don't exist. Like, we left that in a really good place on both sides. And so there was about a month before it made sense for her to step away and for us to transition to new coaches. So whereas maybe on Twitter, it looked like it was like, boom, boom, boom. There was a little bit of time. Like, I was really, I had time to really think about it and to have a lot of conversations. And the first thing that was really important to me was, I guess there were two things going into it, just speaking totally transparently about this, is that I felt that from a totally outsider perspective, having just been a player in the league and seeing all these hires, that it had been done in the past from various clubs in the women's soccer world where either there was a lazy or a cheap hire. And I'm not even speaking about anything in particular. I think it's just the commentary, like sometimes that spirals here. So I was really committed to making sure that I was very thorough with the scope of my search, the diversity of candidates, the conversations I had with coaching mentors and people who I really respect in the field to get their input. So I think when we looked at the numbers, it was like over 30 candidates from like literally all over the world, all different backgrounds, all different types of people, to make sure that I had a really good picture of like what was out there for this. And then just thinking about like there were no constraints in going into this. Like, it didn't have to be a certain person. It didn't have to fit a certain budget. I was going to bring the club the best possible solution, and then we would make it work. That was my mindset going into it. And that was really important to me based on like what I had heard and seen swirling around out there. So, you know, in all those conversations and stuff, the thing that really struck me in particular about both Scott and Bev, there were a few things that I think actually they share in common, although they come from very different backgrounds and have different coaching experience. But one is, you know, their passion for the craft of coaching. And this is something that's kind of foreign to me, but I appreciate it as a player. Like, and I know Bev as a player and how she approached her craft. But when she spoke about herself as a coach, and when Scott spoke about himself as a coach and the way he approaches things, it was a real dedication to it, very similar to what I hear from the players about how they're approaching things and how much they care and what they're putting into this. And I think that was really important. And then additionally, you know, in looking at the timing of this transition, we needed, you know, we have a really great rest of our coaching staff here. And I will give a special shout out to, you know, Becky Tweed has been amazing on the coaching staff. She's really helped with this transition, as has Daniel Ball, the goalkeeper coach, and Philip Congleton, who's, you know, our sports performance specialist. And they've really helped with the transition. So it's not like we're not starting fresh from totally clean slate. So I wanted to look at people too, who I think would come in and mesh well with our current staff and mesh well with the current players. You know, we have a transition to make. We're not starting where everyone's coming in the beginning of preseason. So I looked at, you know, who is going to help us make a smooth transition and work well with the players we have. What I'm hearing from them, I took their feedback, that the things they need and want moving forward, as well as same thing from the staff. So who's going to be good right now to make that transition? And then who also really fits within the club culture and where I see this club wanting to go. So understanding that from ownership, from staff, from players, is what is the core, the essence of what this club is about, and who's going to support that moving forward. So really, I mean, honestly, I feel like I was happy when I finally narrowed down and came to the decision on those two. And I'll tell you guys that I think the thing that really solidified it for me was that I know Bev Yanez, now Yanez, is so loved, like as a player, like there's probably not a more loved player in NWSL. And I will tell you, but the Twitter reaction from people who know her and know Scott, like, honestly, I didn't think anyone could rival her. And I think Scott maybe rivaled her. It was literally tweet for tweet. Scott, mate, so happy for you. Congrats on the role. Love this for you. And then great, Bev. Oh, wow, Bev, in all caps. And honestly, it went back and forth. And I didn't really know that. Like, I knew that people really liked and respected Scott, but I didn't think I knew the extent of it prior to seeing that. And I was honestly blown away. But they've, they are lovely human beings first. And I think they have come in, and it's been pretty seamless in terms of transitioning. So yeah, that was a real in-depth look at the process and where it's taken us.
No, we love it. I love to hear it. And I'm sure listeners are appreciative of all of the context that you're giving as well. But that's so funny to hear you mention some of the reaction to it, because it's so true. You saw that going through some of the timeline, and sort of if we're all mutuals here, and if we all look at sort of like what we use it for, it's for work purposes and a lot of soccer, Twitter realms and stuff like that. But a lot of that was so true. What you're echoing was a lot of positivity around these hires. It was really kind of viewed as a bit of a home run. And I think that's huge. It's very important when you're thinking about things or in such a prolific position, whether it's a head coach or a first assistant, and sort of talking about something like when it comes to something like reputation, where a huge part of that is allowing others to sort of speak to that for you. And the fact that so many people were reacting to these two hires for Parkinson and for Yanez, and that all of the reaction to it was so positive. I think it did speak very, very highly to the reputations in the league on and off the pitch. So I'm excited to sort of really see them kind of get their hands on the team and go ahead and really make this playoff push. Because like you said, the timing of it was really, really crucial as well. The team is in the middle of this, this playoff push. Lisa, do you want to maybe take this next one for us and really get the ball rolling on some other futuristic things in the horizon for Gotham?
Yes, I mean, the playoff push, of course, is one. But Yale, the big news has recently dropped about the expansion draft and the rules. The NWSL adding two new clubs to the league, which is huge, and that is very exciting. But that also calls for a double expansion draft. And before we know it, it will be December 16th, and the expansion sides will be making their picks. And there's been new rules and new outcomes with the drop of this news. Have you had a chance to look at it at all? I know, of course, you have a lot going on, but with two new clubs coming into the league and with an expansion draft, when you look at this and the rules that have come out of the expansion draft, what are you looking at specifically?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Cause I will say this part, you know, I won't lie, it gave me a bit of like, I was like, okay, I gotta take some deep breaths here just thinking about it. Because, you know, the reality is these things really, and this is where I think too, my player insight comes into play a little bit. These things really affect players going into the end of the season. You know, a looming expansion draft causes a lot of anxiety around the team. So as I look at it and I look at the rules, my first and foremost, my goal is to minimize the anxiety and the unknowns for players. And that may or may not be possible fully. Like, I think that there's always going to be, you know, it's going to come to the day and things are going to happen that we don't all know about. But the bottom line is, as much as I can reassure the players and understand the players and their individual goals, and we can all be on the same page leading into it, the better, because the last thing we want is in this really crucial part of the season is for people to be concerned about that on the team. That's, you know, that's for us as a staff to be concerned about and to work out in the best way possible for the club. But what I'm most conscious of in just looking at the rules and how it's all played out in ways that it's played out in the past, they spiral in my mind, is just to protect the players from that as much as possible. So that's my goal. We will see, you know, for some things, it's really interesting in this role. I think I have this idealistic way I want to do things. And it'll be really interesting for me to see how possible it is or what barriers there are to really, I think, doing things in a way that's in the best interest of the players at the end of the day. So we'll see, you know, as time goes on. But really, that's when I see all of this, that's what I think of first.
You know, no one can predict the future, right? And that's going to come sooner than we expect. It's the expansion draft is going to be taking place in December. So shortly after that, November 20th, NWSL Championship Final. But in terms of just the present, let's maybe focus on what we're living in.
Yeah, thank you.
What we're living in right now and the things that we know to be fact, right? One of the big things coming out of 21, quite frankly, rolling into this regular season with NWSL, was the rebrand of this team. And at the time, you weren't in the front office side of things, but there was a huge reaction to the rebranding of this club from formerly Sky Blue FC and then to now New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC. Can you maybe walk me through some of like your impressions of just sort of witnessing that from the opposite side of things when you saw the rebrand to now sort of kind of being in it and really kind of getting your feet on the ground on the administration side of things and continuing to cultivate that culture?
Yeah. So first of all, I will say I'm a very sentimental person. So like even the other day we just moved and I have all these like old Sky Blue training tops. I was looking through this bag and I was like, oh my gosh, this logo doesn't even exist. So when I heard there was going to be a rebrand, my initial reaction was kind of like sentimental. But what I do with anything that has to do with branding or culture is I don't trust my own opinion until I look to my husband, Aaron. I see like, is this cool? And he loved it. Like when they dropped the logo in the video, he was like, this is sick. So that's when I knew. I was like, oh, okay, it's sick. Because I literally don't trust whatever I think is cool or not. Like I have to go to him first to get the real opinion. And well, first of all, the branding's awesome. Like they did an amazing job. But I also now in retrospect look at what it did culturally for the club. And I think it was really important because there is a different feel to this club. This is not the old Sky Blue that I was part of in the past. And you know, there have been ups and downs here, like throughout the years. It's been tough. It's been very New Jersey gritty in a lot of ways. And this is a new look, and it's really interesting that it's happened this year. There's a lot of change going on this year that hasn't been easy, but everybody here is really on board and very hopeful about the direction it's going. And so I think the new brand has really gone in line with the full shift and how it feels different here. And it, from everything from the change in venue and training facility up here at Red Bull training facility and Red Bull Arena, it feels different. To, you know, now we have different personnel in place, literally new members of the coaching staff. There's a lot of different fresh feel, but yeah, the new branding is awesome. And I think it goes in tandem with like a real shift in like, this club is now moving forward, competing to be, I'm not going to say one of the best. We're competing to be the best in the league. It's going to take some time. Like we all know who has been the best historically in the league and is always up there. But now this club, the goal is to be part of that conversation and literally at the top of the table. So that's, I think the new brand kind of allowed for this whole shift.
Personally, I loved the new brand. I like the colors and the
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's awesome.
they really did a nice job with it. And now you get to rep it as part of your uniform, right? Like day in and day out, which is pretty great. But you've also, you mentioned being with Sky Blue previously, in 2009, you were drafted with Sky Blue. And now somewhat 10, 11, 12 years later, you are GM in this league. So you've seen the NWSL over the last several years and how it's grown and how it has changed. So for you looking at this, going from player to players association, now in the front office as a GM of a club in the league and in the NWSL, what is the biggest thing that has changed throughout the league?
Wow. Yeah. Well, first of all, I didn't realize that many years had actually passed, but when you do the math, that's true. I think that, you know, I don't think it's anything surprising. I don't have like a boom, wow answer to that question. And because it's been really interesting, I think from the beginning, we knew it takes time to build this. Like this is the direction we all saw it going and we haven't arrived anywhere. That's for sure. There's still a lot of work to be done, but the key is we knew it takes time. And what we hadn't had in past leagues was the time. And so it was always the goal from day one, like this needs to last because if it lasts, it can get better. That's the only chance we have. You know, seeing the WUSA and WPS, unfortunately, folding after 3 years, we don't even know what they could have been because they didn't have the chance. So for me, the biggest accomplishment of this league is to continue moving forward. And, you know, if you look at like the history, and this is part of what I learned being part of the Players Association that was really valuable, is that the history of MLS is not like, it didn't explode to what it is today, you know, in a couple of years. It was rocky. They came in the same, it's the same path. Like we're not, you know, doing anything new here in terms of like the ups and downs of how this works. This is like what that league had to go through and look where they are now. So if we look at it, you know, We're on the right track. We're on the right route. There are growing pains. Certainly it needs to, you know, be professionalized in a lot of ways and keep pushing that forward, but it has to be here to do that. And you can't rush that process because it has to be built level by level, building block by building block. So for me to see, you know, every year that goes by and the next season schedule gets announced and it's moving forward, it's like pretty special, especially for those of us who are around, you know, I wasn't part of WSA. I'm not quite that age bracket, but you know, being part of a league that then folded, those of us who started off our second league as NWSL, I think share a unique appreciation for that. That maybe I hope the younger players don't understand and fully appreciate. They shouldn't. They shouldn't even be thinking about that. But that's always in the back of our minds. I think is like, whew, it's still here and it's doing well. And so there's so much to be said for that. You know, you can pick out all the things that need to grow and improve, but the bottom line is it's here and it's thriving. So that's amazing.
And now when you look forward, it has grown so much, and you compared it a little bit to the MLS about the rocky start and how it takes time to get fans invested and communities invested, and that's happening. And we're even seeing it with two new expansion clubs for next season in the NWSL. But for you specifically, what is the hope or the goal for the next 5 years for the league or the next 10 years? Where do you hope to see it in the near future?
I think there's a lot to be said for truly building that community feel. You know, it's hard to start something from nothing and to have like true fan bases, true homegrown players coming up through the system, real like club legends. And you know, what we've seen in the past is like the national team, whether it's U.S. women's national team or international national team players, they are the stars. That's great. But like the more of the local stars who are professional players and they're known for their club affiliation, like how many people know Megan Rapinoe as an OL Reign player rather than a U.S. women's national team player? And I think that we're going to see that shift. And I think we're starting to see already players making their mark on the international stage based on their performance in the league and coming up through the league. And, you know, we see it, you know, all the time now. It's not the exception anymore. It's kind of the norm. You see somebody like Lynn Williams, like that to me is a massive success for the league. And she is known as a North Carolina Courage player. That's awesome. So for me, the more we have that stability where players are happy where they are, they want to stay at their clubs, they're developing at their clubs, fan bases can get attached to those players and vice versa. We build the clubs into the communities. You know, that's something the New Jersey, New York soccer community is. I mean, I grew up here. I've lived all over the world and played everywhere. And this is one of the best. Like, it is a really special place, but we got to tie in more to that. So the more, that takes time, but the more time that passes and the more we see these star players being affiliated with their clubs, I think that's kind of the next level that I would like to see. Just, we got to build that over the next, you know, 5 years, but even in the next 2 years, 3 years.
I know we've been chatting a little bit about the current state of things and what perhaps you'd like to see in the next few years in terms of growing the league and how that actually does have to be kind of, you know, what might feel like a very slow process to people who are on the outside looking in. But you do want to build slowly because you want to try to build correctly. So even though it might be painful, right, with the growing pains, we're starting to see some really good foundations, even if it's just at the club side of things. And one of the things that's actually ongoing right now is we're talking about this growth within the league. Is that there are currently ongoing negotiations between the league and the PA about a potential what will be a groundbreaking CBA for players, because we're talking about things that maybe didn't exist in the past that will eventually exist in the future that will absolutely benefit the league moving forward. This is one of those things. And you are someone who has formerly had ties with that as the executive director of the PA at the time. And so now you're on the other side of things. So obviously some of what you could talk about on this topic might be limited, but in terms of just wearing that player hat, that former player hat for a second and having maybe heard some of, you know, those moments of those areas where players have come to you to talking or bringing about certain issues to light, things that they would like to see within a potential CBA. What do you hope to have come out of something like that for the players moving forward?
Yeah, so I think you said a couple really important things already. And one is that this is a historical thing. So I think that, you know, internally, there's certainly an appreciation for that, I think, on both sides. And what people may not realize really the full extent of is that, well, like the notion of a CBA is like, oh, it's the players against the league. Is that the why I got involved in this from the first place is that everyone literally has the same goal. And so sometimes I laugh about it because it's not a battle so much as like a chipping away back and forth to get to this point that's beneficial for everyone. And it really is. It's setting the guidelines for how the league and players will operate moving forward to make decisions. And that's this is what I've learned about a CBA. Like, I know nothing about the legal side. I know nothing about like really like labor unions and that movement, but this is the piece I've learned is like the purpose of this contract is to dictate the operating mechanism between both of these the most important parties to the league entity itself and the group of players. And so whether it's the, you know, the players, the team staff, the ownership group, the league front office, the fans, like everyone benefits from this. And when it's announced, it's going to be, I hope, a really big moment of celebration because it is going to change the trajectory of women's soccer in this country forever. And everyone working on it, I'm really proud of them because I've had to step away and I've left them to it. But everyone working on it is literally making history. So even I want to speak to something that's like been out there too. Even something like, I think this is a good example. The campaign that went out with the No More Side Hustles. You know, I know that initially, I think that was received by some ownership groups and by the league as like maybe an attack or a slight, but it's not that at all. And I think if everyone thinks about it, I think that's everyone's goal. Is that these women can just focus on their career. Everyone literally has the same goal. And as the league succeeds, the players succeed. As the players succeed individually, the league succeeds. So it's really a cool process. It's a hard process and they have been hard at work at it. I think that's the part that like even I haven't been privy to, like the real nitty gritty of how hard work it is to go through every aspect of the league and player experience and dive into it all. But everyone in the outcome of it, everyone wins, I believe. So I'm really excited for, you know, when this is going to be like a monumental thing when the first CBA is signed and done. And then, you know, then we really go from there. But it's huge, huge, huge for the league and the players.
Looking forward to it for sure. I know we can't wait to celebrate what a huge win that will be for everybody, quite frankly, the players and the league. Yael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. This was a wonderful conversation. I hope we can have you back maybe when that CBA is announced. Maybe.
Yeah, we'll come celebrate together.
Right, we'll celebrate together. And, you know, as Gotham continues to playoff push, we'll be keeping an eye on it. And maybe if you guys break through on that, we'll have you back to go up to chat a little bit. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.